Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
This week I saw three off-Broadway plays, each about a different era. One follows a troupe of very bad actors in the 14th century, though it does take a midpoint contemporary detour. Another takes us back to the 80s and the impact of the murder of a California politician. In the third play, we are in colonial era America, enjoying a panoramic look at economic decisions, slavery, knee-jerk liberalism, and much more. Well, let's begin with the Vineyard Theater's new offering called The Amateurs. Written by Jordan Harrison and directed by Oliver Butler, this comedy follows a scrappy group of medieval pageant players performing while racing against the Black Plague. The current troupe of six actors is first rate, each uniquely individual and given his or her moments to shine. There are some very funny bits and even some cogent thoughts about the necessity of art. Now, halfway through the 90-minute production, the lights come up, the fourth wall comes down, and one of the actors emerges portraying the playwright. Time to contextualize, he says. He offers childhood memories as part of a rambling lecture on our own recent plague, that being AIDS. I still haven't decided on this conceit or whether it is necessary. There is some inside baseball here as Winnie takes a swing at immersive theater. How are you? The faux playwright asks the audience. Don't answer, he quickly adds. It's not that kind of play. This interlude ends and we return to the actual show, which is a tad slapsticky for my taste, but the audience largely seems into it and The Amateurs is an inventive piece of work. How often do Tolstoy, Freud, and Seuss, as in Doctor, end up in the same sentence? I suspect the Vineyard has a hit on its hands. Now, the subject of AIDS also comes up in A Letter to Harvey Milk, another rather inventive piece, playing at the Acorn inside the Theater Row complex. This one, too, is 90 minutes, but it's a musical with music and lyrics by Ellen Schwartz and Laura Kramer. The play tries to go for a bit too much. The subjects include storytelling, Judaism, homosexuality and homophobia, gun violence, Harvey Milk having been the first openly gay politician in San Francisco when he was assassinated, and even a dark secret involving a concentration camp thrown in for good measure. Still, there is much to admire here, particularly the joys and necessity of Jewish humor. It's in our bones, says one character. What are Jewish holidays about, asks another. Well, they try to kill us, they fail, so let's eat, comes the answer. The three main actors are exceptional. Adam Heller is the widowed butcher who decides to sign up for a writing class. Cheryl Stern is his dead wife, very much a constant and witty presence here. And especially Julia Nitel is a writing teacher and rather damaged lesbian. Harvey Milk, who happened to know the butcher and was an inspiration for the young teacher, even shows up periodically. I told you there's a lot going on. The songs are nice enough, though I think the piece would have more impact if they flowed into conversation. The definitive end notes and space for applause do not do the show any favors. Well, that's my free advice for the next round. My final visit of the week was to the always interesting Public Theater and its new offering entitled The Low Road. Written by Pulitzer Prize winner Bruce Norris, this one features about 50, yes, you heard right, characters, portrayed by 17 actors. They are directed by Michael Greif of Dear Evan Hansen fame, so attention must be paid. This is a hugely ambitious piece, 2.5 hours of economic history, starting with and starring Adam Smith. The Scottish author, philosopher, and economist is portrayed here by Daniel Davis. He's a wonderful narrator who takes us through the fictional stories of the ever-changing cast of characters, most importantly an adopted and brainy fellow who we watch grow up, and the slave he eventually buys and ultimately spars with. Bruce Norris certainly writes a lot of dazzling dialogue. Luck and charity are no basis for a society. We traded one form of shackles for another. All profit is theft. The play is very funny, though there are a few too many brand name references. It works when saying that the red-faced natives would one day go on to run casinos, and that the road that characters travel would one day be I-95. But then come Dunkin' Donuts and Taco Bell, and well, it's like a joke too far. The second act begins with a surprise. Suddenly we are no longer in colonial times, but in contemporary ones, at a financial conference. The idea, I suppose, is to give us a sneak preview of the damage wrought by all those early ideas about money. Naturally, this reminded me of The Amateurs inserting its fourth wall-breaking detour. I don't know if this one is necessary either, and my hunch is if the play moves to Broadway, it may not make the cut. Let me also say that this production has to break the costume change record, both in terms of speed and number. Like A Letter to Harvey Milk, this play covers a lot of ground, too much, in fact, losing focus for its last third, which begins to feel like a playwright in search of an ending. We are bombarded with ideas about globalization, deregulation, and mostly the unequal distribution of wealth. The Low Road is a long one, but overall it is a relevant and largely entertaining look way, way back when many of our monetary ideas were born, along with our independence. I find it interesting that this is the second show of the season, Junk being the first, which is entirely focused on money, how to keep it, make it, share it, and so on. I guess we're still seeking the answers. Anyway, I'm feeling a bit whiplashed by my week of time traveling, Jill, but I guess we learn about today by looking back at yesterday.
Absolutely. Now, you know who the comedian was who said that short summary of every Jewish holiday, right?
I do not.
Alan King. They tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat.
I didn't know that. They should have credited him.
And it's made its way into all sorts of things, including the Passover song. You know, I mean, it's, but that, that, but that's, you know, again, in context, it's, by all means, use it. And I, you know, I don't say you necessarily have to credit. I just think it's really important to be aware, and I'm sorry, I'm starting to sound like a broken record on this one, but it's really important to be aware of what came before you.
Oh, absolutely. And I didn't know that. If I were writing that, I would say, and as one great comedian once said, you know, there's an easy way of doing it without.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if it's necessary. Going back to something that we covered a few weeks ago, but that appeared in the paper of record last week and made me want to stick pins in my eyes. You know, it's talking about how will these revivals play in this Me Too moment, and it just makes me want to. It makes me wonder who's assigning these stories, basically.
Well, we're all having the same ideas. It doesn't matter who has them first.
But if you can't, there was a wonderful error on Facebook, which they apologized for. This just caught my attention. Because somebody posted something about the Venus of Willendorf, and it was blocked because it was a pornographic image.
I see.
Okay. Now, so that they were banned. Mm-hmm. Now this is a prehistoric, obvious. You know, for anyone who doesn't know, and in my view, hey, you should know. You should know that there's a 30,000-year-old prehistoric figurine out there in the world.
So what was the error they made?
They blocked it as dangerously pornographic. Dangerously pornographic.
I see. Listen, Jimmy Kimmel said penis last night, you know, in front of a billion people on the Oscars. I don't know what. There's not that much that's blocked anymore. Facebook is very sensitive these days on that subject.
But you have to know that. No. Algorithms. This many, many years of screenage has really taken a toll on people's ability to understand nuance or think critically.
I agree.
And the great thing about live theater is that in many cases, except for the sets, of course, you actually have to listen and process the words and the information.
That's right.
And, and that is not conveyed. I mean, that's why you go see a revival.
Right.
Get out of, and again, this is just my opinion, but so, okay, great. We're in this time where everything is highly sensitized. Got it. Now, put that aside for one sec. Go see this.
Absolutely. And remember when it was written, where it takes place, when it takes place. We did talk about this with Hello, Dolly. And of course, I mean, if people are going to go into My Fair Lady and think that Eliza is abused,
then they should they need to reevaluate the purpose of entertainment. If that's why they're going.
That's right.
Then.
I totally agree. And that's what's interesting about these shows this week, coincidentally, which all were about distant times in the past, yet they somehow feel the need to bring us up here and tell us, okay, don't forget, this is going to matter because of what's happening today. Or this is, I'm not sure we need that.
We get it.
You don't have to say, and now to contextualize for you. I don't know.
Right.
We get it. I wish they'd have the courage of not having to do that. But, and then they hurt themselves because so much is thrown into the kitchen sink that kind of we lose the focus. But still, hey, I guess when you get a platform, you want to put in as much as you can when you've got our attention.
Or put another way, this is why God invented editors and curators
and
directors.
Indeed, and we all need editors.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.